So we are holding on Mem Hey Amud Aleph, 9 lines from the top by the 2 dots. We said in the Mishnah, V'chol ha-yotzim la-hatzil choyzun la-mekoyman. So we said, the Mishnah talked about the cases where a person doesn't have their original tchum because they left it, but midrabanan, we give them a new tchum because they were yotza bereshus, they went out of their original tchum with permission of Beis Din. We said, for example, they went to give Eidus HaChodesh, or they went to save somebody or whatever. So we said in the Mishnah, V'chol ha-yotzim la-hatzil choyzun la-mekoyman. We said, anybody who goes out on Shabbos of their original tchum in order to save somebody's life can return to their place. So what does that mean? It says, you're telling me no matter how far they went out, they're still going to be able to come back. The first part of the Mishnah said that the situation was that that while he's on the way, they told him the thing's already been accomplished, the Jews have already been saved, the woman's already been given, has already given birth or whatever, and we said that he has a new 2,000 amos from where he is, implying okay, even according to Rav Shimi bar Chiya, we said in that case, fine, he can return home because the tchumen overlap, but that's talking about at least where he was within a tchum Shabbos from his original location, but where the two of them overlap. But if let's say they didn't overlap at all, so let's say he had gone. So the case we learned yesterday where Rabba and Rav Shimi bar Chiya argue, as we said, the most generous possibility is we're talking about he started walking from his house. On the way, so while he's within, so he's more than 2,000 amos away from his house, but then while he's within the next 4,000 amos of that, they told him, Kvar Nasa Maisa, and since his new tchum overlaps with his old one, then Rav Shimi bar Chiya allows him to consider it one big tchum and return home. But even Rav Shimi bar Chiya, on the face of it, wouldn't say that if he had gone a couple of miles, let's say, and now his new tchum doesn't overlap with his old one at all, that he should be able to return home. So what do you mean? The answer is Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav Shachozin B'Klei Zayin L'Mekoyman. The Mishnah is not just coming to tell us that they're able to return home. What the Mishnah is telling us is that they can return home with their weapons. You're right. You're only allowed up to 2,000 amos in every direction from your new spot. The point is that since the person is carrying weapons, because he was going to save, we're talking about, let's say he was going, in the case of the Mishnah, he's going to save Jews from marauding Goyim or whatever, so he has his weapons with him. We don't say, well, once he's told Nasa Maisa, or once he already accomplished what he needed to and they defeated the Goyim, we should say maybe you can't carry your weapons anymore and you should just drop them off over there and not be Mechal Shabbos. No, you're allowed to carry them home. So the Gemara says, "My kusha, what was the hava mina of the kasha in the first place? Duma lahatzil shiny." You could always say that the Mishnah is distinguishing between two different cases. You can have the cases where a person is going out of his tchum with the reshus of Beis Din, but where it's not a life and death matter, or where it is a life and death matter, but it's not something involving weapons, it's not something involving where there's a danger in staying where they are. So we have the case of Eidus HaChodesh, and we have the case, for example, of a midwife who's going to help at a birth. There's no particular danger if they stay there until after Shabbos. Versus, you're talking about when they're fighting against Goyim, who are marauding and threatening Jews. You could say that in that case, it's more dangerous that Goyim are going to chase after them, and maybe therefore. So in other words, the Gemara is saying you have Amina, and the question was you're always limited to within 2,000 amos of your new spot. But why? If you yotzim lahatzil, there might be a case where you have to go much more than that. Maybe the Mishnah is telling us like this: if you're going out for in peacetime, so for Eidus HaChodesh or to help at a birth or whatever, so then you have a new tchum of 2,000 amos from your new spot, and if that doesn't overlap with your old tchum, then you can't go back home. But if you were yotzim lahatzil, then we make a further exception and we say you'd even be able to return home. So what was the question in the first place? After all, the last part of the Mishnah, B'chol ha-yotzim lahatzil, is obviously talking about where they went out to save. That's what lahatzil means, and therefore the din should be different. You're right, the Gemara says, Ela ikasha hokasha. You're right. That's not such a question, because yes, you could say there's a difference between lahatzel and not. The real question is as follows. It's none. Now, like this, we learn in a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, we touched on this briefly yesterday, that because we said that Eidus HaChodesh is one of those things for which you're able to go outside the Tchum, to go and tell Beis Din that the new moon was seen. And the Mishnah over there says like this, but Rishona, originally, the Edom would not move from there the entire day. The Mishnah mentions over there that there was a courtyard in Yerushalayim called Beis Yazik, and once the Edom came, if the Edom came on Shabbos, then they would have to remain within there the whole Shabbos, because again, the whole enclosure counts as four amos, like Ram Gamliel's Shitta in the first part of our, in the first Mishnah of our parak, but they weren't allowed to go outside of that because they'd come from outside the Tchum. Actually, Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah discusses an interesting point. Why should they be limited only to the courtyard? Yerushalayim itself has walls. The whole Yerushalayim should be counted like the four amos. So Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities. Maybe Taka, maybe when the Mishnah says that they wouldn't leave there, it just means Yerushalayim proper. It means you were the whole Yerushalayim. So they weren't allowed to walk out in the tomb of Yerushalayim, but they were able to walk in the whole city. Still, though, the point is that usually a person wants to be able to take on Shabbos a spatzir outside the city a little bit, and here they couldn't. Fine, but still, they might want to on Shabbos. They might want to be able to. But the other possibility, another possibility, Tosfos says, is that maybe in the times when this took place, when Gamliel Azaken made his takana, as we're going to say in a second, there were breaches in the walls of Yerushalayim, so it wasn't considered. So it wasn't considered for Amos anymore. So it depends, right, when we talk about that the whole enclosed area is considered four amos, it has the usual dinim of fencing, the usual dinim of an enclosed area that we learned in the second parak. You can't have a breach in it wider than 10 amos, and it has to be omen merubala parot, et cetera, et cetera. So over here, Tosfos says their one possibility is they didn't have that. The Greeks, we know, made breaches in the walls of Yerushalayim. Maybe in Ram Gamliel Zakan's times, those hadn't been fixed yet. Anyway, the point is, the Mishnah says, so originally the Edom were limited only to there, meaning the city of Yerushalayim as a whole, or the Chotzer in particular, but the Rav Gamliel HaZaken made a Hiskin Rav Gamliel HaZaken, Sheyesh Lehen Apayim Amos L'chol Ruach, that no, they have 2,000 Amos in every direction, outside the Chotzer, or outside the city, in order to encourage them to come in the future. If you don't do that, then they're going to say, you know what, in the future, why should we bother? So now they would come to Yerushalayim. Now, once they were interrogated by Beis Din, then they're free to walk around throughout the whole Yerushalayim, according to the first, according to one possibility, or even within 2,000 amos outside Yerushalayim the second year. Okay. And the Mishnah continues, V'loy elo bilvad omru, that's not the only case where we say that a person has a new tchum, ela afilo chachama habala yalid, even a midwife who's coming to assist at a birth, v'habala hatzum and agayis, a person who's coming to save other Jews from a troop of goyim that are attacking them, umina nahar, from a river that's flooding, umina mapoilus, or from a collapsed building, umina dleika, or from a fire, all of those, harein ka'ansheir, all those people are considered like the other people in the city that they came to, and therefore they have 2,000 amos in every direction. So now comes the question, the true loy, what do you mean they only have 2,000 amos? Our Mishnah says that if they're coming to save another, that if they're coming to save other Jews, then they're able to return home. Which means afilu tuva, even if it's much more than 2,000 amos. So here you can't say there's a difference between lahatzel or not, because the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah is mentioning a bunch of cases of lahatzel. And still we're saying they only, that Rav Gamliel HaZaken Takana allows them a new tchum around the city. But that's it. If they came from several miles away to help, then it sounds like they can't go home. But our Mishnah says, kol ha-yotzin lahatzel chozu l'makayman. That's the contradiction. The answer is Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. So here is where Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav that it means, like we said, Shechozer and Bekleizayim Lamakoyman. The point is, you're right. It does mean they only have 2,000 amos. But what it means, on the one hand, it means that they only have 2,000 amos. But what it does mean is, when they're walking home, if their home is within 4,000 amos of the place where they were, such that now they're going to use their new tchum and their old tchum, and like Rav Shimi Bar Chiya said, it overlaps, and therefore they're going to come and go back home. They're allowed to take their weapons back home. Usually that would be carrying on Shabbos. Here we're matter it. Why? Because Tanya. Originally, the rule was that when they come to save people, they would have to leave their weapons in the first house near the wall. In other words, they would leave the city. They've saved the Jews of the city. Now, as soon as they're leaving, they find the first house that's near the city. They drop off their weapons there, and then after Shabbos, they go pick them up. But Pam achas ikiru behen oivim, one time the enemies, the goyim, realized that they had come out of the city. The rodfu achareihim, and they started chasing after them. The nichnesu lito klei zainon, so they went into this house to take their weapons and fight back. The nichnesu oivim achareihim, but the enemies, the goyim, followed them into the house. And now they're pushing one against the other in a panic. They ended up killing more among themselves just from the pressure and from pushing one against the other and trampling one another in panic even more than the goyim killed. But Oisa Shah his skin, at that point the Chachamim made a takana, that they can return home with their weapons. So in other words, now obviously carrying on Shabbos is daraisa. Usually the Chachamim don't have the power to override a daraisa. But here what it is, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh. So in other words, all it is the Chachamim declared this is a case of pikuach nefesh, and therefore they're able to return home with their weapons. So, yeah, when we learned in Shabbos about the boots with the nails on, with the shoes with the nails on them, exactly, yeah. So the point is, in other words, that our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah are telling us two different dinim. Number one, that they have a new tchum, and if their new tchum happens to overlap with their original tchum, then good, they're actually able to return home. The other detail the Mishnah is telling us over here is that they don't have to drop off their weapons in the first house near the wall. They're able to take their weapons with them wherever they're going on Shabbos. For. Exactly. So in the case of the Edim that come, we're saying they have 2,000 Amos and that's it. In the case of Aborim Lahatzel, we're saying there are two Dinim. Number one, they have their new Tchum, and number two, that they're able to take their weapons home if necessary. Yeah. Yeah.
Where do we know that the Raisa, Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos and Yom Tov? It's the Chai Bahem?
Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos and Yom Tov. So we actually touched on it a little bit in Masechta Shabbos. We mentioned one particular limud over there. Actually, we talked about one particular limud over there, but actually we're going to eventually in Masechta Yoma, later this year, Bez Hashem, we're going to get to the Gemara is going to bring a half a dozen or more limudim of this concept that pikuach nefesh is deicha Shabbos. So wait until we get there and we'll discuss it, Bez Hashem, in the last parak of Yoma.
But what's the main source, briefly?
There's not one main. I mean, one source is v'chai b'hem v'loishu yomus b'hem, but there are a bunch of others, as we'll see over there. Okay. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Loi Kasher. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says there's a different way we can reconcile the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which says that they only have 2,000 Amos, and our Mishnah, which says that they can return home with their Klei Zayin. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says it's not a matter of being able to return home with their weapons. What it is, Kanshin Nitzchu Yisrael as Umas Olam, Kanshin Nitzchu Umas Olam as Atzman. It depends. Did the Jews defeat the Goyim? Then, in that case, then things are relatively safe, and then therefore they're only allowed to walk up to 2,000 Amos from their new spot. As opposed to Kanshin Nitzchu Umas Olam as Atzman, where the Goyim defeated themselves, which is a nice way of saying that it's a euphemistic way of saying that they defeated the Jews. So then the Jews are now in danger. Now they have to be able to go as much as possible. So that's what, so on Mishnah, when it says that they can go, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah is talking about where the Jews defeated the Goyim. So now, okay, they're safe. So now the Chachamim gave them a new tchum, and there's no reason for them to go outside it. As opposed to when the Goyim beat the Jews that time, then the Jews have to go as far as possible. So that would be it. No, so that's the point. If they were to be limited only to 2,000 Amos, they'd still be in danger. They could only go that far, and the Goyim still are going to catch up to them. So therefore, so our Mishnah, when it says Kol Yotzin Lahatzel Chozer LeMakayman, is talking about where there's still an ongoing danger from the Goyim. So actually, that's fine, okay, but nevertheless, Okay, but nevertheless, that the Chachamim felt is not going to discourage. They have food with them. It's not like where they went to save them. And obviously, if they don't have food, then yeah, they have to be able to go and forage for food. That's also a matter of pikuach nefesh. But we're talking about where you don't have those considerations. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Orach Chaim dealing with the issue of Hatzalah. When Hatzalah goes on a call, are they allowed to go back to their original to their original base with their equipment? That's similar to our mission over here, Yotzim B'Klei Zayin, V'Chozrim L'Mekayimim. So among other things, Rav Moshe talks about, first of all, if the equipment they have, if there isn't another one in their area, then they have to anyway. Let's say, for example, they took along a defibrillator or an oxygen tank or what have you for somebody. If there isn't another one back in Crown Heights or Flatbush or whatever it is they went from, they're going to have to, yeah, well, then they're going to have to go back anyway, because it's practically, then there's no question they have to go back because it may be needed for somebody else. But he goes into a long tshuva discussing this Gemara over here, and he says, even where that's not a consideration, still this din of Yotzin Lahatzu, Chozrin Lamakayman, can still apply. And he discusses it. He discusses it at some length. Besoich HaDvarim, he talked because among other things, it may not be safe. It may be a place where it's not safe for them to stay till after Shabbos. They may indeed be called for another call, and that's a consideration also. Besoich HaDvarim, Reb Moshe talks about this when we're saying over here that the Goyim won versus the Jews won. He says it does. L'chora, he says if the Goyim won, then of course everybody is fleeing. What do you mean that only the people who saved are able to be chozer l'mekayman? So he explains that we're talking about that it's basically a difference of whether the government prevents goyim from attacking Jews or not. So if it's the kind of place where the government prevents goyim from attacking Jews, then maybe they don't have such a heter of chozer l'mekayman. But we're talking about over here where the government doesn't do that, and the goyim have free reign, as was true in New York when he wrote the Struva in the late 1970s, and unfortunately is true now also, where the government is not always in control and not always protecting. So then you have more of a heter of Chozer L'Mekayman on those grounds alone. Yeah. Amr of Yehuda Amrav. Nochrim Shetzaru Ala Yoris Yisrael, a related din, if Goyim are besieging a Jewish city, Ein Yotzin Alein B'Klei Zainon, you don't go against them with weapons. Now you're going to wonder, why not? Aren't Jewish lives in danger? Hold that thought a second. Wait. The Ein Mechalin Alein Asa Shabbos, you can't be Mechal Shabbos in order to break the siege and fight against the Goyim. Bamed, we learn similarly in a Braisa, but the Braisa continues, when is that talking about? Where the Goyim came and they're besieging the city in order to take money. So money is not a valid reason to be Mechal Shabbos. Aval Boal Iskin Fashas, but where they're coming to kill Jews and therefore lives are in danger. Yotzin Alein B'Klei Zayin Mechal Shabbos, then you do go with weapons, you are Mechal Shabbos. Uve ir hasmuchal isfar, and furthermore, if it's a city near the border, afilu leboal iskin afoshes, even if they're not coming specifically in order to kill, el al iske tevin vakash, even if they're only coming to take straw or stubble, yotzin alein b'klei zainan machal lein as Shabbos, then you do go and machal Shabbos for this. This is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and this is the Rebbe used to point this out any number of times in connection with Shleimus Haaretz. A city near the border, it's very dangerous to allow the Goyim to take it over, even if they're only coming for Iske Tevin Vakash. Because now it breaks down the defenses, and now they can go in more places in the country and threaten more Jewish cities. So therefore, you're Mechal Shabbos in the first place to prevent them from doing that. So by the same token, Shleimus Haaretz, you always had the people who are into Shleimus Haaretz because they say, you know, it was conquered by Jews, it's part of the Zionist, Zionism. And all that, the Rebbe was always sure of that. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of based on the halacha in the Gemara over here, and the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Jewish lives are going to be in danger if you give land away to the Arabs, and therefore, for that reason, you can't do it. Yeah, we've seen that, unfortunately, too many times. Yes. Yeah. Omer of Yosef, Baman Yumi, Omer of Nachman, Ubovel Keiras Muchal Sfardamya. You should know that Bovel is considered in this connection like a city close to the border. V'Targuma Nahauda. Specifically, they explain this as talking about not the whole country of Bovel, but rather Nahauda. Nahauda, Rashi explains, on one side of it there were Goyish settlements, on the other side of it there were Jewish settlements. So the same way, like Nahauda was the key to those settlements, to those Jewish cities. And if Nahauda was captured by the the Goyim, then all the Jews in those cities on the other side of it would be in danger. And therefore, so we're saying that if the Goyim attack Nehaudah, even on Shabbos, then you go and fight them.
But by that logic, you could say that then we should invade every country to protect ourselves. There's no limit.
To invade every country to protect ourselves. If they're not at war with us, we don't necessarily need to go to war with them. But if they are at war with us, then you go and conquer as much as possible. You know that during the Six-Day War, during the Yom Kippur War, the Rebbe was very strong on the point that we need to conquer and hold as much of their territory as possible in order to prevent them from using it as a base against us. But in peacetime is different, of course. Anyway, okay, you know what? We do have ground to cover, so let's go on. I do want to mention though, first of all, the Teres Chaim, one of the really important Dachronim, points out a little bit differently. He says when we say Nehaudah is like a border city, it doesn't necessarily mean what it means is like this. He says not like Rashi is saying there were Goyim living on one side of it and Jews living on the other. Throughout the whole Bavel, he says, you had Jews and Goyim living fairly close one to another. You had cities that were all Jews, but even those cities, nearby them, there were Goyish cities. And you actually have something in the back of the Gemara in Hagoyis Asheri, Hagoyis on the Rosh, it mentions a concept which is brought in Shulchan Aruch as a Yeshayim, that nowadays, when we live among the Goyim, anywhere where they come, even if it's Al Iske Momen, even if it's Al Iske Kevin Rakash, they're like what happens now. We have a concept in Halacha, Einot Amamid Atzma Mamoinai. A person is normally not going to see that people are taking his money or his possessions or whatever, and not stand up to try to defend it. And therefore, so it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, even if they're only ostensibly coming from Mammon, because we live among the Goyim, and such things can easily spread, and pogroms can come of it, and whatever. And therefore, so Hagoyis Hasheri says, so nowadays, we're more generally Machal Shabbos when Goyim are attacking. And the Teres Chaim says, that's what the Gemara is saying over here also, in the same vein. Since Nehaudah, it's not just a matter of the particular city of Nehaudah has Goyim on one side and Jews on the other. In general, throughout Babel, anywhere is like Nehaudah in that regard, where you have any Jewish city is in effect on the border because you have other Goyish cities nearby, and therefore you can be Mechal Shabbos. They don't always say why they're coming. This is also true, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Dorosh Rab Destoy Dimin Biri. So in this connection, Rab Destoy Dimin Biri said a drosha as follows. My dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Shmuel like this. This is during the time when David is running away from Shaul, so he and his men are wandering around from one city and from one town to another in the south of Eretz Yisrael, always staying one step ahead of Shaul. And the pasuk says, Vayagidu LeDavid Lamer, they inform David as follows, Hine Plishtim Nochamim B'Ke'ilah, the Plishtim are fighting against Ke'ilah, Vehema Shoisim Es Agrones, and they are looting the granaries. You had granaries where the Jews of Keilah are keeping their grain and their straw and whatever, and the Plishtim are looting that. So what's going on over there? Tana, Keilah ir hasmucha l'sfar hoisa. This Keilah was a Jewish city near the border. Because we see the Plishtim are attacking it. Mind you, by the way, I mean, according to what they think nowadays, the city of Keilah was actually fairly close to Hebron. So you think how far inland that is. You realize how powerful the Plishtim were at that time, how far in Eretz Yisrael they're already invading and going. Yeah. Anyway, Vehem Loy Bo El Al Iske Kevin Vakash, and we see that the Goyim are not coming to try and kill Jews. They're only coming for straw and hay. Vehem Ashoisim As Agronis. As we see, all they're doing is they're looting and pillaging the granaries. Nothing else. And yet. But the pasuk continues. Vayishal David b'Hashem lemer ha'elich the kasi b'plishtim ha'elah. It says David asked the urmatumim, should I go and strike against these plishtim? Vayemer Hashem al David leich ve'kisa b'plishtim or es plishtim actually. Vayishaita es keila. Hashem says to David through the urmatumim, go strike at the plishtim and save keila. That's the point. And so the question is, my kamibayle. So the question is, so on the face of it, yes, the Gemara is assuming at this point that we're talking about that this took place on Shabbos. And therefore we see, so there we have this din of even they're coming only al Iske, Kevin Rakash, but because the border town, which at that time it was, if they conquer it, if they end up taking Kevin Rakash, then that's going to embolden them, that now they can come and eventually they're going to be more comfortable, right? They can come take other stuff, they can eventually take over the city, and then they're going to more easily be able to conquer other safe parts of Eretz Yisrael. So, but let's analyze. So on the face of it, so now the question is, where exactly do we see that this was Shabbos? So there's a couple of things. Tosfos mentions the fact that the Pasuk calls it Milchama, and the fact that David went to be Moser Nefesh on it, which in the end he did. He went with his soldiers, and he went with his men, and he fought against the Plishtim and defeated them. So the fact that the Pasuk calls it a Milchama, and the fact that David was going to be Moser Nefesh on it, that shows that it's important enough to, in other words, Tosfos says, doesn't necessarily mean that it was on Shabbos, but the fact that it says that, the fact that we call it a Milchama, and that David was ready to be going Moser Nefesh on it, shows that it's the kind of thing that on Shabbos also you would be Mechal Shabbos for. There's a couple of other possibilities that Mephoshim bring up. One of them is, why does the Pasuk have to mention Bechlal, Behema Shosim Asagronis? Why does it have to mention that the Plishtim are raiding the granaries? Just say that they're fighting against Kayla. The point is, even though they're only coming to raid the granaries, still we see that David is going on fighting against them, and that he's asking. But we have to ask, my kamabayale, what exactly is David asking? Ilema ishori iosur, is he asking, since it's Shabbos, that is it osur or mutter, is it mutter or osur to go fight against the goyim? How could that be? Why is he asking the umutumim? How do they based in ishor shmuel haramasi kayim? The shmuel and his based in are still alive. You don't ask a matter of isur veheter by the umutumim. You ask the Urim V'Tumim for things, am I going to be successful or not? If you have a Shaila in Halacha, you go and send it to Beis Din. So it can't be that the question was a question in Halacha. Ela imatzlach, ilay matzlach. So evidently, it must have been, the question was not whether he's allowed to or not. David knew the relevant halachas, or he could ask Beis Din if he needed to. The Anthony Pasha needed an answer from the Urim V'Tumim. Is he going to be successful or not? So in which case, maybe it wasn't on Shabbos after all. In that case, then that's what Tosfos is saying. So not necessarily was it on Shabbos after all, but still the fact that it calls it a Mochama and that David was ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh for it shows that it is the kind of dangerous situation that would warrant Chilul Shabbos. There's another answer also, which is when David says Ha'elich the Kesiv HaPlishtim. Now why is he mentioning Ha'elich? Should I go? The point is, according to, I think, Ben Yoyoda gives this explanation, the fact that he mentions the going implies that it was Shabbos, and therefore he's wondering, number one, there's going to be the Chilul Shabbos of the fighting, and number two, there's going to be the Chilul Shabbos of going outside the Tchum, and he's asking. So, okay, the Gemara is saying over here, the Shaila, he's not asking about the Urim V'Tumim, but he's still asking, is it something that I should be doing? No, well, actually, in the event, yes. What happened was, once they came to Keilah, what happened was, the people of Shoal heard that David is in Keilah and started coming to try and capture him, and the passage continues, the people of Keilah were ready to give David over to Shoal. So therefore, again, David asked the Urim V'Tumim, he had an inkling that was going to happen. He asked the Urim V'Tumim, and the Urim V'Tumim told him, get out of here. The people of Keilah are going to hand you over to Shoal if you stay. The truth of the matter, I mean, on one level, it's very ungrateful of them to do that. But, you know, on another level, there is actually a halacha. It originally comes from a Mishnah in Trumas, and then the Yerushalmi discusses it, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if you have Goyim, or in this case a Jew, a Shoal, or threatening a city, if you don't hand over this particular person, we're going to kill all of you. So the din is, there's actually a din. Im yichadu lahem k'sheva ben Bichri, if they single out a certain person, like Sheva ben Bichri, who rebelled against David, and they say, we have a story in Shmuel Beis about this, where we want him dead and we don't care about the rest of you, then the halacha is, you're actually allowed to hand him over. So the people of Keilah would have been acting according to halacha, because David being in there is going to endanger the whole city. Shoal would wipe out the whole city, like wiped out Noiv, if he figures that they're helping David. So the Prokim were divided by the Goyim, yeah. Aleph and Beis and Shmuel was also divided by the Goyim. In Halacha, it's considered one big sefer. Okay, anyway. So he was told to go, but then after he was there, then Shaul heard that he was there and started heading in that direction, and David realizes what's going on and asks the Urim V'Tumim, is Shaul going to come? And if he is going to come, are the people going to hand me over? And Hashem says, yes, he's going to come. Yes, the people are going to hand you over. So David got out of there before Shaul showed up. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, he had 600 people. That's, yeah. Okay, anyway, let's go on. Okay, so anyway, so the point is, so eventually, though, ultimately, though, the question to the Urim V'Tumim was not so much, should I go on Shabbos? Because, yeah, Shiloh, like that, you don't ask the Urim V'Tumim, you ask a Rav, you ask a Beis Din. The question was, Pashut, is he going to be successful? Dekanami, in fact, we can see that from the words of the Pasuk. Dichtiv leich v'hikis about Plishtim v'ashayt eskeila. The answer was, go fight against the Plishtim and save Keila. In other words, he's being told he's going to be successful. So therefore, that was the whole question. What's he doing with the Urim V'Tumim? Ah, so the Pasuk mentions that after, not David himself is not wearing them, obviously, he's not a Kohen. After Noiv, after the city of Noiv was wiped out by Shaul, then the one member of that family was left, Evyoser, the son of the previous Kohen Gadol, Achimelech, he ran away to David and brought along with him the Urim V'Tumim. So now, from now on, David had them available to him to be able to ask when he needed. There was the Mishkan. So what? There was a Mishkan. The Mishkan they had it. Yeah, it was made by them. They were descendants of Eli. Yes. All right. Let's go on over here. We have ground to cover. Okay. Anyway, so the bottom line is on one level we can learn from this pasuk that even if they're coming al iske tevin v'kash, we can be mechallel Shabbos. In the end, it doesn't necessarily mean the story actually took place on Shabbos. But we still see that it's called a Mochama, and we see that he was ready to be go and Moshe Nefesh, and the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning Behema Shoismas Agronis, showing, in other words, that even though they're only Shoismas Agronis, it's still considered, even though they're only raiding the granaries, it's still considered a Mochama, because Kilo was a city near the border. Okay. Mishnah says, Mishi Yosha Vaderach, if a person was sitting on the road, so he's walking on the road, he's tired, he sits down to rest. He didn't realize that he was within the Tchum of the city. Shabbos began while he's sitting there. V'amad v'ra'ah, he wakes up, he stands up, and he sees, hey, I'm within the tchum of the city. Harezahu samach le'ir. He sees that he's close to the city. Now, if he had in mind to be koine shvise in that city, no question about it, he would. That would be similar to what we had in the first mission of our perek, when the Chachamim are coming on a boat to Eretz Yisrael, and they ask Rav Gamliel, were we within the tchum of the city before Shabbos? So here it would be the same kind of thing. If he knew that he was within the Tum, and he meant that his Makom Shvisa should be in the city, no problem. He'd be able to walk, as long as it's less than 2,000 Amos, he'd be able to walk the less than 2,000 Amos to the city. Now he's in the city, and now his Tum is 2,000 Amos in every direction from the city. But here he didn't realize. Here, when Shabbos began, he was asleep. He didn't realize that he was in the city, that he's near the city. So the Mishnah says, since he didn't intend to be in the city before Shabbos, and therefore to be Koneshvis over there, lo yikonis, then he's not allowed to go in. Meaning, he's allowed to go 2,000 Amos from where he is. He is Koneshvis where he is. But if his 2,000 Amos wind up somewhere in the middle of the city, then it's only as far as there that he can go. Whereas if he had in mind to be Koine Shvisa in the city, then we would say he's able to walk the entire city, 2,000 Amos around in every direction. The whole city would count for him like 4 Amos. But here, because he didn't have that Kavana, then no, we just measure 2,000 Amos from where he is now. If that happens to come to a certain point in the middle of the city, then that's it. That's as far as he's able to walk in the city. It's a matter of Kavana, right? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, you can't ask. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, he is able to go in regardless. He is able to be considered like a person from the city, even though he didn't have that in mind. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, in fact, I'll give you an actual example. It happened once that Rabbi Taifin did exactly that. He was outside a city before Shabbos. He didn't realize even that he was within the tomb of the city. And on Shabbos, he realized that he was. After Shabbos began, he realized that he was, and he went and then became like one of the members of the city. So you see that that's allowed. So the Gemara explains, what was the story? Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, my said Rabbi Tarfin Shoyim Ahalach Baderech. It happened once that Rabbi Tarfin was walking on the road. V'choshchaloi, it got dark, Shabbos began. V'lon chutz la'ir, so he spent the night outside the city because he didn't realize it was close enough to the city. In the morning, some cowherds found him. Some people who were pasturing their cows outside the city found him. They said to him, Rebbe, the city is right in front of you. It's less than 2,000 Amos from here. He can't, so come on in. And Nichnes, he went into the city, the Yoshev of Beis HaMedrash, he sat in the Beis HaMedrash, the Dorash Kolayim Kolayim, and he was darshaning in Torah the entire day. So we see, Rabbi Yehuda says that you're able to do that. Amru loy mishom raya. So the other chachamim said to him, is that a proof? On the side of Ehud, brings from Shiltas that specifically it was Rabbi Akiva said to him, is that a proof? I'll tell you, the story was a little bit differently than you thought. Shema b'libay hoya. First of all, maybe indeed Rabbi Taufin did have in mind to be koneh shvisa in the city. Okay, he slept outside the city. The cowherds, they don't know what he's thinking. They thought he's sleeping outside the city because he can't go in. But really, maybe he had in mind all along. He knew to begin with that he's within 2,000 amas of the city. That's one possibility. Or another possibility is the Beis Medrash was within 2,000 amas of his spot. We said he is able to go into the city. He's just not able to walk through the whole city because his Makam Shvisa is, let's say, 1,000 amas outside the city. So he can only walk 1,000 amas into the city. Fine, the Beis Medrash, where he went, happened to be within those 1,000 amas. That could also be the Beis Medrash may be built from away from where everyone lives, so therefore it's more likely. So it might have been closer to his club. It's possible, but we don't even need to say that. We could say it. We don't even need to say that, though. We could say that that it was within the city, but it wasn't far enough into the city for it to be a problem. So yeah. So in other words, so the Chachamim or Rabbi Akiva tell Rabbi Yehuda there's no solid proof from that. Nevertheless, though, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Not necessarily. You're saying in those days it was dangerous. Obviously, in this case, it wasn't. Obviously, the Typhon had no problem with it. It was a peaceful enough area he didn't have a problem with it. What? So the halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda, that this person, even though he didn't have kavana to be in the city, is still considered like he was koneh shvisa in the city, because halacha divramekel ba'eru, because we're going to learn tomorrow, best Hashem, and therefore he's able to be like a member of the city, and he has 2,000 amas in every direction from it. Again, of course, this is only as long as where he stopped off was within 2,000 amas of the city. If he stopped off more than 2,000 amas of the city, then that doesn't help us. He just has a tum of 2,000 amas in every direction, and that still doesn't get him to the city. Okay. Mishnah says, Mishi Yoshin Baderech. Okay, so in the previous case, actually, so in the previous Mishnah, it wasn't necessarily that he was sleeping, it's just that he hadn't realized that he was close to the city. Now we have another case, Mishi Yoshin Baderech. He slept on the way. He didn't know when Shabbos began. So now when he wakes up, then Rabbi Yechon Anuri says he still has 2,000 amas in every direction. The Chum say, no, he only has 4 amas. Because in the previous case, he was intending to be koneh shvisa. In the previous case, in the previous Mishnah, the point is he was intending to be koneh shvisa. The only question is he koneh here or there? Rabbi Yehuda takes the view. In the previous Mishnah, if he had known that he's close enough to the city, then he would have been intended to be koneh shvisa in it, and therefore we can consider as if he did. Whereas the Chachamim are saying we don't look at that. By the way, in the previous Mishnah, if he explicitly says, I want to be koneh shvisa here, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that, no, he doesn't become like a person of the city, because he explicitly said that, I want to be koneh shvisa here. The question is, he didn't explicitly say one way or the other, but he was awake when Shabbos began, so he has a full tum Shabbos, either here or there. So fine, the Chachamim say he didn't explicitly say, I want to be koneh shvisa in the city, therefore it's no good. Rabbi Yehuda says, since he would have if he had known that he's close enough to the city, then we can consider it as if he did. But here in our Mishnah, we're talking about he was asleep, so he didn't have any intention to be koneh shvisa when Shabbos began, because he was asleep. So therefore, the Chacham say he only has 4 amas. Right, so that's in the previous mission, that's the case. He didn't know exactly how far he was, so he figured, by default, he's koneh shvisa someplace. So fine, the Chacham say because he didn't know he was close to the city, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says we don't look at that, but here we're talking about he was asleep, so he was not koneh shvisa at all while he was asleep. Well, at least the Chacham are saying that not. Rabbi Yechon Anuri is saying he still is, as we're going to see in the Gemara. Okay. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Omer v'hu b'emsar. Now, b'chlal, when we talk about these 4 amas that a person has, Rabbi Eliezer says it means it's a 4 amas square or 4 amas circle with him exactly in the middle of it. In other words, it's 2 amas on each side. Rabbi Yehuda Omer l'ezer ruach sh'yotzei me'elech. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it means it could go 4 amas in any one direction. It doesn't have to be Dafka, surrounding him. It could be, he could go 4 amas in any one direction from where he is. But Rabbi Yehuda does agree that if the person picked a certain 4 amas, let's say he picked the 4 amas to the east of him, then he's not allowed to afterwards change his mind and say, you know what, I really wanted the 4 amas on the west of me. So he can't. So no. So in other words, so he's Kona Shvisa. He's not Kona Shvisa over here. So he does. So he only has four amas. Rabbi Yehuda is saying he can choose that the four amas should all be in this direction. But once he chose that, he can't now choose to start walking in this direction. Right, he can't come back and say, I made a mistake, right. There is, by the way, there is a machlokas aposkim, whether would he be allowed to, according to the Yehuda, does it dafka have to be all on one side of him, or could he still do, like Rameir says, and have a circle or a square with himself centered in the middle of it? Okay. Hoyushnayim, what if you have two people in this situation? Each one is stuck outside the city, each of them was asleep when Shabbos began, and therefore, according to the Chum, they only have four amas. Or any of the other cases where they only have four amas. But let's say their two foramas overlap a little bit. So now we're able to, now they're able to bring their food and eat it in the middle spot. So Rashi explains, let's say, for example, so you have, let's say, two people in this situation. They happen to be six amas away from each other. According to the Yehuda, that they're able to pick their four amas in any direction they want. So one of them picks four amas in the direction of the other one. The other one picks four amas in the direction of the first one. Now they wind up. Now they have two amas overlapping in the middle. So good. So now they're able to have a picnic there in the middle. The point is, we're not choshish that they're going to take it out into their respective rishos. Now, he's not allowed to move something from his own four amas into the other guy's four amas outside of the shared area, because the reason is, Rashi explains, we're talking primarily over here on Yom Tov, because on Shabbos you'd have different issues as far as carrying, but the point is, we learned before, and we're going to learn in the Gemara over here, that an object has the same tchum as its owner. So if the owner is able to walk 2,000 amas outside the city, then an object that belongs to him can only be carried in that area. And if the person only has four amas, like in the cases of our Mishnah, then the objects that belong to him also only have those same four amas. So therefore, he's not allowed to bring something into that shared area and then take it out or throw it out or whatever into the other guys, because then it's going outside of his mini tchum over there, his four amas. Well, the point is, if it was on... It's not that you're sharing his thing. What it is you have a place where their tchumim overlap. So in that overlapping area, they're able to eat together. This way, they could just eat in their own square, but they don't have to. They're able to join together and have a little picnic over there in the middle area over there, as long as they don't take anything out from one's area to the other. What about Hoyu Shloisha? What if you have three people? V'amtsoi muvla b'nehen. The middle one overlaps with the two of them. So two of his amas are within ones and two of his amas are within the others. So here's the scenario. So you have Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. So Levi now has an overlapping area with Reuben and an overlapping area with Shimon. Reuben and Shimon themselves, in this case, don't have an overlapping area. So the two end ones don't have an overlapping area. So now we're talking about, let's say they were nine amas apart. So even one has four amas and one has four amas, they're still an ama apart. But let's say now Levi overlaps with both of them, partly with one, partly with the other. So then the din is hum mutu imahen. He's allowed to join in and have a picnic together with them. Behein mutonin imah. Each one of them is allowed with him. Ushnai machitzonim asurim zemzeh. The two outer ones, Reuven and Shimon, are also with each other because they have no overlapping area. Amr of Shimon, Lamar Dover Domer, so Rav Shimon says, what can we compare this to? And we'll see eventually in the Gemara, in a couple of blocks, why Rav Shimon needs to compare it to anything. I mean, the din seems to be pretty straightforward in itself. But Rav Shimon compares it to a case involving Erev Chatzeres. L'sholosh Chatzeres apsuchas zulazu. Suppose you have three Chatzeres that are open one to another. Upsuchas l'shosarabim. Each one also has an independent entrance to l'shosarabim. And then the din is, if the two outer ones made an eruv chatzeres together with the middle one, then the same din would apply. He muteres imahed. The people from the middle one would be able to carry to each of the outer ones. Behem muteres ima. The people from the outer ones are able to carry it. But the two outer ones are going to be also to carry one to the other. Now, the point is, we're going to learn these details in more detail later in the Masechta. But the point is, and we're going to learn, we're going to explain what Reb Shimon is talking about later at, towards the end of our parak. But the point is, in other words, that if you didn't have, if the Chatzeres didn't open, if one or another of these Chatzeres didn't have an entrance to Rosh Hashanah Abim, then it would be different. Then we would say that if they don't make an Eruv, then none of them might be able to carry over there. Because they're walking through. Because let's say the people in this chatzer have to walk through this chatzer and this chatzer to reach Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, so if they didn't all make an Erev together, then these guys might be also to carry as well. Because each one has their own entrance to Rosh Hashanah, therefore they don't need that. Each one is able to get out to Rosh Hashanah themselves. But because they have doors between them, therefore, they're able to make an Eruv between themselves. And if they do that, if they don't make an Eruv, all three of them in common, just the two outer ones make an Eruv with the middle one, then the result is the two outer ones can't carry with each other, but they're both able to carry in the middle area. And the middle area is able to carry to each one of them. So the same thing, Reb Shimon says, that's similar to our case of the three travelers. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Boy, Rava, my kasavar of Yechin Menuri. By the way, Rashi mentions a point over here. Now, we learned a few days ago that if a person's tchum ends in the middle of a city, we said he's not able to go further, obviously, but we said he is able to throw things in the rest of that enclosed area. And so he's able to transfer things in the rest of that enclosed area by throwing them. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that Reuven and Shimon, let's say, can throw things to each other? So we say the mission or not. Rashi says the difference over there is because ultimately the difference is over there you have the whole city is considered one reshus. It's not a reshus yachid, but it's considered one reshus as far as tchumim. But over here, when a person has only four amos, in effect, that four amos becomes like his reshus yachid. So therefore, he can't carry out of it because that would be carrying from one reshus yachid into Kaimalis or into whatever. Which, in the case where this tchum ends in the middle of the city. So then Rashi says, so the whole thing is a Rosh Hashanah. So he's not allowed to, so we're talking about on Yom Tov, you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah. So fine, therefore he's allowed to throw things throughout the rest of the city. But over here, what we're saying is that when he only has four amos, and other cases also where four amos are relevant. Rashi mentions another example we learned in the previous parak. When a person puts down his Eruv, we said that place where he put his Eruv is considered like four amos. So that kind of thing, the Chachamim treated it like the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So therefore, Midrash Rabbanan, he can't carry outside of it. Okay. Right. Okay, so Boyi Rava. So Rava asks the question in our Mishnah. My Kosovar Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri. When Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri holds that even though the person is sleeping, he was still koina a shvisa, and therefore has a tum of 2,000 amos, what's the basis that he's saying it on? Is it Misper Kosova Hefte Hefka Koinin Shvisa? Is it that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri holds that Hefka items are able to be Koinin Shvisa? And therefore, so this person in effect is like a chayfet of hefker because an object has no das to be able to be koinah shvisa, and this person didn't have das to be koinah shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos either; he was asleep. And over dinu deliflig bekalim, really in that case, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri could have argued about the case of kalim. Let's say you have a keli of hefker that was left outside the city. Is it considered that it has 2,000 amos, and therefore a person who picks it up can carry it 2,000 amos in every direction from there? Or do we say that it has only dalet amos, and a person who picks it up can only carry it within those four amos? Is that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri's reason? And the fact that they're only arguing in the Mishnah about a person is loydiach hakoychan derabbanan to show you how far the rabbanan hold in how far the rabbanan go in being machmir on him that he only has four amos. The afagav de ikalamei mahoyu v'neir kana yoshen nami kana. You could say with a person can sometimes have das, unlike a keli never can. If he had been awake, he would have been kodesh visa. So we could say that since he's asleep, maybe he is also. And yet the chachamim say that not. So it's Kamash Malon Deloy, and the Chacham are telling us that no, you can't derive from when he's awake to when he's asleep. So when he's awake, he would be Koinah Shvisa, but when he's asleep, he's not. Actually, Tosfos points out that it wouldn't just be a chumrah of the Rabbanan. Actually, the fact that the object, if we say the object is koine shvisa, then it comes out a little bit of a chumrah, actually, because it means you can only carry it within those 2,000 amas. As opposed to if you say cheftze hefke ein koine shvisa. So no, it doesn't mean that it's limited to 4 amas. What it means is the first person who picks it up and is koine, it now becomes his tchum, and he's able to carry it as far as he's able to walk on Shabbos. So you can easily have a case. Imagine, for example, the object is 4,000 amas, so it's almost 4,000 amas away from the person. So the person happened to be at one edge of his tchum. He finds this thing. So now he's able to walk 2,000 to his makom shvisa, another 2,000 from there. Whereas if we said the object was koine shvisa, then it would be limited to 2,000. So in a way, it comes out of Kula that way, to say that it wasn't Kona Shvisa. So maybe, therefore, the Mishnah wants to tell us how far the Chacham are going to be Meikul in that. Now, when it comes to the person, fine. When it comes to the person, it comes out of Chumra, but fine. Maybe the Chachamim want to teach us a Kula when it comes to Kalim, but they're arguing about a person to say that even in that case, they argue. Maybe Rabbi Yechon and Nuri would agree that objects that are hefka are not koinish visa. Maybe Taka, the reason is because he says since the person would have been koinish visa if he was awake, then he's also koinish visa if he's asleep. Whereas a hum don't make that equation. So in that case, so again, there's two ways of understanding. Is it that in general a hefker object or a person who's sleeping can be koine shvisa, or is an object of hefker is not koine shvisa, but a person can be even if he's asleep? So what's Rabbi Yechon Manuri's reason? Amar Rabbi Yosef Toshma. So Rabbi Yosef says, I'll bring a proof from a brisa. Gshomim sheyodim erev yamtiv. If rain falls on erev yamtiv, then we say that rain, that water that fell, has 2,000 amas in every direction, meaning it was koine shvisa, but biyamtiv. But if the rain fell on yamtiv, harein kadag lekaladam, then it's like then it goes according to any person because it wasn't koine shvisa bein hashmoshes. So any person who picks up some of this water is able to take it throughout his whole tchum. So another exactly that it rained. It rained on Erev Yomtiv. So we're saying the water that fell, the rain that fell, if a person picks that rain up, so when Yomtiv began, in other words, that water was in one place. That water was, had landed in a pit of water or something. So now we're saying that it was Kona Shvisa where it is. Now it's Chetzei Hefker. Nobody took possession of that water yet. And we're saying, therefore, that's Koine Shvisa. So you can only move it within 2,000 amas of where it was at the beginning of Yom Tov. So even though your own tchum might go further than that, your own tchum, again, you might be at one edge of your tchum, and you therefore have 4,000 amas to walk all the way to the other edge, but you can't take this water with you outside of 2,000 amas from where it fell. But if it fell on Yom Tov, then you are allowed to. So we see that Chefze Hefke Koine Shvisa. So let's figure out. If you say that Rabbi Yechon and Nuri hold that hefker objects are able to be koine shvisa, then we would say this braisa is going according to Rabbi Yechon and Nuri. But if you say that even Rabbi Yechon and Nuri hold that hefker objects are not koine shvisa, meaning the first person who picks them up creates a tchum for them right now, their tchum becomes his tchum. Well then, ma'homani, then who would this braisa be like? Lo Rabbi Yechon or Lo Rabbanan. It wouldn't be like either one of them. So we have to say, therefore, that Rabbi Yechon and Nuri holds that chefze hefke koinin shvisa, because that's the only way to make this braisa work. If chefze hefke koinin shvisa, then we wouldn't say that yesh lehem apayim am l'chol ruach. We wouldn't say that they have their own 2,000 amas. But Yosef Abaya v'ka'amal al-hashmaita, Abaya was sitting and saying over the statement and this discussion, Amalei Rab Safra l'Abaya, but Rab Safra says to Abaya, that's not an actual proof. The Duma b'ksham masmuchan la'iraskinan. Maybe we're talking about specifically rain that fell near a city. So the people in that city intend to be koina that water. So you could say, therefore, that they intended at the beginning of Yom Tov that this water, that they're planning to draw this water and use it sometime over Yom Tov. So therefore, it gets their tchum because they had their minds on it before Shabbos. Who says that the same din would apply to if they didn't have it in mind or if it's out in the middle of nowhere if it's out in the middle of nowhere and nobody particularly had in mind to be coin it, maybe then we would say that it's not Kona Shvisa, and the first person who picks it up is able to take it anywhere within his tchum. If it rained after Yom Tov began, then we said it wasn't Kona Shvisa. But we said if it rained before Yom Tov is the case we're focusing on, where when Yom Tov came in, it was already on the ground, it was already in the well or whatever, and we say so Rav Safra is saying that if it fell near the city, then maybe we would say that then we would say that it's considered it has the tchum of the city. But if not, if it was not near the city and the people of the city therefore didn't have it in mind, then we would say it has a pai mama of its own. Maybe the braisa is bechlal not addressing the case where it's far away from the city. Maybe indeed in that case it wouldn't be kohen shvisa, and the first person who picks it up and takes possession of it is able to carry it anywhere where he's able to walk on Yom Tov. But maybe when the braisa is saying that it has only 2,000 amas, l'choruach means that it was near the city and therefore it has the tchum of the city. So Abaya says to Rav Safra, you can't think that way, because we have a Mishnah in Beitza that says, Bursho Yochid Kiragla Yochid, the water that's in a pit that belongs to a Yochid goes according to the feet of that Yochid, meaning if somebody else goes and draws water from it, he's able to carry that water only within the area that the owner of the well can carry in. So if, let's say, the owner of the well, lives over here, and the well is here, so it's within his tchum, fine, obviously, but somebody else, let's say, who lives over here, would be able to draw the water, but he can't carry it all the way back home, because that'll be outside of the owner's tchum. Continues the Mishnah, if the well belongs to the people of the city, then kiragli oisahir, then it goes according to the feet of the people in that city, meaning again, only 2,000 amas outside the city. So even though you may have made an eruv of tchumen and you're able to walk further, but you can only take it as far as the people in the city can walk. By the way, what happens if some individuals in the city make eruv of tchumen? Then you have the base. Yosef discusses that, and other achronim discuss the question of what happens exactly to that water. What exactly would a tchum be then? And Bishal Ole Bovel, and continues the Mishnah, if the well belongs to the Ole Bovel, meaning it's Hefker, it was made for the purpose of the Jews who came from Bovel to Eretz Yisrael to have water for their animals, then, and for themselves, then Keragle Hamamale, then we say it's Hefker, and the first person who filled it up is able to take it wherever he himself is able to walk. No, it means in other words, he can carry it anywhere within his own tchum, within his own tchum. No, right, because they didn't go to the city. The Shel Oy LeBavel is Hefker, the first Jew who takes it. Yeah. So now the problem is, so Abaya says to Rav Safra, Vitanya. Now, on the other hand, we have another braisa that says Borsha Shvatim, the well of the Shvatim, meaning the wells of Oy LeBavel. Then the water of them can only go 2,000 amas in any direction. So the first braisa is telling us that the water from the wells of Oleh Bavel is not Kona Shvisa, and therefore the first person who picks it up creates a tchum for it. Its tchum becomes his tchum, or his tchum becomes its tchum, whatever. Whereas the second braisa says that no, it's only 2,000 amas. Kashin adadi. So you have a contradiction between the two braisas. So obviously the answer must be that. So in other words, you and Safra are trying to say that the original braisa that we quoted about rain that fell on Erev Yom Tov is talking about where it's near the city. But here with these last two braisas, you can't say that. Both of them are clearly talking about wells that are hefker, and yet one says that you can carry it wherever you can go, and the other one says only 2,000 amas from the well. So obviously it must be that those two braisas are one according to Rabbi Yechim and Nuri and one according to the Chachamim, and that would show that Rabbi Yechim and Nuri holds Cheftze Hefker Kohen and Shvisa. Because again, if he held that they're not Kohen and Shvisa, and the only reason in our mission of why the guy has a tchum of 2,000 amas is because if he had been awake, he would have had, so now even when he's asleep, he has, then if nobody holds Cheftze Hefker Kohen and Shvisa, then you don't have any, then there would be no Tana who says that the water from this well should have 2,000 amas only. So, okay. He also came to Rabbi Yosef. So when Abaya came to Rabbi Yosef and told him about what's going on over here, Amalei Hachi Kamer Rabbi Safra v'Hachi Ahad Relay, Abaya was Rabbi Yosef's Talmud, so he came to report to his Rebbe what happened. He said to Rabbi Yosef, this braisa that you had brought originally about rain falling on Erev Yom Tov versus on Yom Tov, this is, so you mentioned that braisa. Rabbi Safra asked such and such a question, and I answered him like this. I answered him with the two other braises. Amalei, said Rabbi Yosef, tells him, you didn't even need that. You could have disproved Rabbi Safra based on the original braisa itself that I quoted. Because if we were thinking that the case is that the rain fell near the city, and therefore the people of the city have in mind to get it, then why would the expression be that it has 2,000 amas in every direction? It should be, it should have said that it goes according to the where the people in that city can walk, because that would be the din, according to Rav Safra. If the people in the city had in mind on that water, then it means, at the beginning of Yom Tov, it's considered theirs, and therefore it's Kodesh Visa according to the city. The fact that the Braisa doesn't say that, the fact that it says Yesh Vahana Paim Amal Horach, implies that it has its own independent tchum, independent of the city. So nothing to do with whether it's near the city or not, it's just a matter of because Chefze Hefter Kodesh Visa. So you don't even need the other two Braises to show that there must be an opinion that holds Chefze Hefter Kodesh Visa, and that opinion must be Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri. From that Braisa itself, we can see that it was Kodesh Visa, and that's why it says that it has 2,000 amas in every direction. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Well, on Shabbos, obviously, you can't carry it outside Rosh Hashanah Yochid anyway. So that's why we're focusing on Yom Tov. You still have the same dinim of Tchumim on Yom Tov as you do on Shabbos. But as far as carrying, you can carry on Yom Tov, so therefore it's more relevant to talk about whether you can carry it 2,000 amos or more than that. Okay, Shkayach.